This is a Locker Room Production.
Welcome back. This is the Big Blue Banter New York Giants football podcast here giving the Locker Room Q&A. As always, every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, we will be hosting a live Q&A with all of the listeners on Locker Room. If you don't already know, for those of you listening to the recorded version of this, you can join us every single Tuesday, 8 p.m. Just download the Locker Room app, wait for me to put out the tweet for it, or you can download the app and put on notifications and you'll hear it there. Nick should be joining us very shortly. I'm not sure when, but he'll be here soon. It's going to be me and Nick tonight. And just a little more house cleaning before others show up in the room and we get this thing going. Please, if you would like to help us out and grow the show, do us a favor, head over to iTunes, leave us a rating and review, hopefully 5 stars. If not, you will be called out, as Kwame can attest to. Also, please do us a favor. We started a YouTube page. It's Big Blue Banter on YouTube. All you have to do is type in Big Blue Banter. You'll see our logo there. Please do us a favor. Hit that subscribe button on the Big Blue Banter YouTube page. Head over to YouTube. Watch a couple videos. Even if you only watch for a few minutes or leave it on in the background, do us a favor and do that as well. And also, as always, you can find us on Instagram at NYBigBlueBanter. All right, that seems like we got all of that out now. So let's get right here and going with some of the people who have joined the queue. And by the way, one final thing. If you want to talk with us, it's like a live Q&A show for those of you who are new to it. All you have to do is hit that microphone button in the bottom right of this room in your app right now. Once you hit that button, click request to speak. And then once you request to speak, at that point, we'll get you in the queue and we'll go from there. But on that note, let's get this thing started. Nick, how you doing, man? Looks like you joined.
Dude, draft week, man. It's one of my favorite weeks of the year, man. I'm so ready for it. What about you?
I'm so ready for it. I wanted to be here already. I feel like the waiting is the hardest part, as Tom Petty once said. If I hadn't said that, would you have gotten that reference, Nick?
Well, I'm pretty sure that's a reference that's been used pretty universally. But yeah, I am a fan of Tom Petty.
Okay. All right. It seems like you beat around the bush with that answer. I don't know if I'll accept that. But maybe. But let's get to some of the speaker requests here. It looks like we got a couple coming in. David is first, so let's throw David in. How you doing tonight, David?
Hey, good. Great. How are you guys doing?
Good, man.
Yeah, I got to get on a work call shortly, so I just wanted to thank you guys for all the great draft stuff. You know, I'm ready for the draft to be here. I'm really done kind of listening to every kind of conjecture, so I'm ready to get some new guys to root for and excited about the season and seeing about your, you know, getting into previewing the season kind of stuff. But I just wanted to thank you guys for everything that you did, because I definitely learned more about the draftable players this year than I ever had in the past. So I do appreciate you guys a lot. Just a general question about the team. Where do you think that if they have the draft that, you know, say they get Devontae Smith and, you know, an offensive lineman, you know, to play the interior somewhere within the first few rounds, where do you see this team heading into the season? Do you think they're a 10-win team?
I first off, David, thank you so much for the kind words. And you're right, there is a lot of conjecture right now on draft Twitter, so we're all eager for the draft to happen. But honestly, I think this team can be a 10-win team if everything goes correctly. And a lot of it's going to be dependent on some things, especially on the offensive side of the ball. It's particularly Daniel Jones' development and the offensive line's development. Will bringing in Rob Sale really help Will Hernandez and Shane Lemieux's kind of progression and allow them to go from like more jag type players to average to above average starters? If those things can happen, then yeah, I do believe this Giants could be a 10-win team and they should win this division.
Yeah, and again, David, thank you so much for those kind words. I really appreciate it. We, you know, this is what we're going for. We're happy when somebody like you, somebody who's been a fan of the show for a while, appreciates all the content and the work we're putting out there, because the goal is to do this for you guys. I mean, we love doing this, obviously, and there's a little money in it for us, but mostly it's to interact with you guys and to put out a really good product. So when we hear that you're enjoying it, it definitely makes me feel really good. And to answer your question, I'll say this. I don't like to look at these things, you know, from my perspective as much, because I do feel like I am in a bit of a bubble when it comes to the Giants, having covered this team so much and for so long. So instead, let's point to somebody like Mike Clay, who works for ESPN. He used to be my boss at Pro Football Focus. He does really good projections. I say, honestly, his projections might be the best in the business. If you really went back and looked at everyone's projections for strengths of roster and for, you know, the coming season, I'd say Mike Clay's are probably up there with anyone's. And he, earlier this offseason after the free agency, said that according to his projection, the Giants have a top eight roster going into 2021. And so they have a really good roster. Like Nick said, it will come down to three things in my mind. One, can Jason Garrett improve his offensive system? Can Jason Garrett learn from his mistakes? And can Jason Garrett have maybe less of a say? Because ultimately, I think that will be the big thing there, because I just don't trust a guy that old who's done, not old, but that who's had that many years running that same system to change it dramatically. But small changes can help. Two, will the offensive line hold up? We all know this. There's no team. There's no 10 wins. There's no 11 wins without an offensive line next year. And then obviously three, can Daniel Jones regress? But I think honestly, even if you just got what we saw from Daniel Jones in that 4 or 5 game stretch before the injury last season, when me and Nick both thought he made great improvement, if you can just get that version of him without him actually taking a step, but you get the step from Garrett and you get the step from the offensive line, that to me right there is 11 wins.
And that's also, though, I think an important part is we're kind of expecting the defense to play like they did in 2020. That's not necessarily a given. Now, I believe they should take a step forward, adding Adoree Jackson to that cornerback 2 spot. Losing Dalvin Tomlinson is unfortunate, but we know how these things go. Sometimes defenses just take a regression backwards. I think with Patrick Graham running the show, that won't happen, but still, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
I think having McKinney for the full year is also something that should not be understated, because I think
and
he's going to be,
for that matter.
Yeah, the two of them in that secondary, you know, I do think they're – I love that they are going to the coverage importance model over the pass rush model for the most part, because I do believe in that. I think the best defenses in the league over the past few years have had that model. So I do like that they're actually using that approach, you know, going forward. So thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for joining us, David.
Be well, man.
You too.
All righty. Let's see who is next. Next up is Stan McCune. What is going on, Stan? How you doing, my man?
Stan, what's up, bud?
Stan the man. You there? Stanley.
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, what's up?
Gotcha, Stan.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, brother.
Good, good. Hey, I just wanted to say, first off, because I keep hearing people say that they've been listening to the pod since the Turchin days, and I just want to throw my hat in that ring. I've been listening to it since episode one. I've not listened to every single episode because you guys produce so much great content. But anyway, I've been listening to it a long time, and it's been great the whole time. So thank you guys.
Really appreciate that, Stan.
And Nick, I got to know, you know, because you guys joke a lot about your dietary habits. Do you ever do a cheat day?
So I don't have many huge cheat days, but I'm gonna catch some flack for this. My cheat days are Thanksgiving and my birthday. All right,
it's unbelievable, right, Stan? It's truly unbelievable. I have to think twice sometimes about like if it's real.
I remember how
excited Nick got around Thanksgiving time, because he's like, "Yes, this is my cheat day. I go all in on Thanksgiving. I have ambrosia salad. I do it all."
What do you look forward to the most on your cheat day, Nick?
Honestly, probably the sweets, because I'm not a big – I don't really partake in any sweets throughout most of the year, but I'll have a couple pieces of pie. You know, I won't just relegate it to one piece of pie or anything like that. So I'll have like a cheesecake or something like that, you know, pumpkin pie, apple pie. I'm a big pecan pie fan, pecan pie if you want to pronounce it that way.
Wow.
So I'll go in that direction.
Okay. All right. Not my pie choices, but okay. I'm doing that.
What do you expect from someone who has 2 cheat days a year?
at least go for a nice New York style cheesecake or something, you know.
That's a good choice as well, I would imagine.
You would imagine. You're just imagining what this would be like.
Exactly.
All right, football questions. So I've been trying to think. Back, because every year I feel like the draft is the Giants Super Bowl for us as fans, because it's like endless potential, And, you know, it's like the only day of the year that we actually have a chance at like, like doing something that's like interesting and like where we can actually be successful, it feels like.
Uh-oh, I think Stan got hit with the...
You still there? Oh, looks like some internet issues for Stan. I see that low bar. He's got one bar going right now. All right, Stan, we're going to keep you in the room, but we're going to go on to the next person for now, and you can jump back in after him if you can get back your internet connection. So for now, we're going to welcome on Dom until Stan can get back his internet.
Day that's not on the draft.
Nope. Oh, maybe not.
Stan, so you cut out for the vast majority of that question.
Yeah, you got to start that whole thing over, Stan. Your internet can't cut out.
All right, 1 second. Let me go off my Wi-Fi here.
All right, Dom, hang with us for a moment. You'll be
okay. Down. All right, that's fine.
Sorry, can you guys hear me?
Gotcha, Stan.
All right. I'll try to abbreviate it here. So I feel like the draft is the giant Super Bowl every year for us as fans because it's like the one day of the year that like they actually do something that's like interesting and that we can like kind of celebrate. And it's been a long time since I felt like they had like a something good happen during the season that we could celebrate. I'd probably say like the Odell one-handed catch was probably the last time that like I felt that way as a fan. So I'm curious how far away you guys feel like we are for it to be a non like draft day, something during the season that we can like celebrate as fans.
Honestly, I think somebody,
Stan, do you mind just hitting mute while you wait? Cause it sounds like something's going on in the background there. It sounds honestly like you're frying up either bacon or chicken. And I know I already ate dinner and Nick won't eat any fried food. So
it's me, I think
either of us.
So there's frying in the background.
I think that's Dom. I don't think that's me.
All right. Dom, I'm going to remove you for a second, buddy. All right. Wow. Well, that was interesting. All right, Nick, you want to tackle this question first or me?
Yeah, sure. First off, I want to speak on Dom's dietary habits because eating bacon at night is actually a pretty fun thing. I'm really happy for Dom that he's probably doing that, frying up bacon. But honestly, he's living his best life, and I support him for it, Stan. But I think that this year could be a year like that. I mean, it depends on how you feel about Joe Judge in this era. I feel like a lot of Giants fans are supportive of this current era of the Giants coaching staff and kind of what's going on right now. Maybe not as much for Dave Gettleman, but definitely for Joe Judge. So this would kind of be that first year. Last year, I mean, you win 6-10. Like, that's not great. No one's saying that is great. But there did seem to be this just different culture around the team as opposed to what we had with Ben McAdoo and what we had with Pat Shurmur. Joe Judge seems to run a tighter ship. Seems like he has a different kind of way he intensity to his practice and just to him himself. So I buy into Joe Judge, to be honest. And I believe that this season, if the Giants, you know, string a couple winning streaks together, which he hasn't done yet, which we haven't really seen yet. So we kind of need to see that. But I think this year could be that year in a weaker division, if the division stays weak, where we start getting excited about games on Sunday. And it's not just, let's hope our rookies play well or our first year contract guys play well. I'm hoping that's this season, to be honest, Stan.
Yeah, and no, I'll piggyback on that. Like we answered before when we were speaking with David, I mean, I think it should be this season. I mean, they've put together, and this is not my words. Like I said, I referenced Mike Clay, who, like I said, does really good job with projections. Is originally an Eagles fan, so there's no chance he has any lean or bias toward the Giants in their favor. And he put them as having a top eight roster. If you really look up and down this roster, the few weaknesses are offensive guard, inside linebacker maybe, but I think there's a chance Tay Crowder can progress there as well. And then I guess some would say receiver. Honestly, I don't even feel like if they don't even draft a single receiver, and I don't want them to do that. There's so many good ones in this class, but I still don't think that would be a weakness, honestly, to be completely honest with you, with Galladay, Shepard, Slayton, even Ross, who I kind of like, and then Ingram kind of working off the line of scrimmage for whatever he's worth maybe these days. But like I said, I mean, this is a really strong roster, and I agree with Nick. This should be the year that we get excited about this team again, get excited about Sundays. And it's not about just like winning a crap division with 6 wins and or 7 wins or whatever it was last year when they were quote unquote competing for a division. That was fake. And this year, I think it can be real. I think they can get out to maybe a 6-3 type start or get out to a situation where every Sunday matters and they're competing for playoffs and seeding and potentially winning the division with a respectable record. But it is a lot going to come down to Daniel Jones. He has to, at minimum, play like he played during that stretch, starting with the Bengals game leading up, or I'm sorry, starting with the Washington game, I believe it was, leading up to the Bengals injury. Or there was one, I'm now blanking on it.
Yeah, he got hurt. He got hurt season. In the Bengals game.
He got hurt in the Bengals game, but that first half against the Bengals is what you need, what you're going to have to see more of. But yeah, I mean, I really think this should be the season. And obviously, if this is not the season, quite obviously, they have to completely get rid of Gettleman. Like, it's not even a, it won't even be a question. They spent so much this offseason after letting him spend every single offseason but 2019, and they dipped into their future, and they've had their fourth straight top 11 pick overall, including the year they had three first-round picks. Enough would be enough. So, of course, this would be the breaking point, I think, for hopefully everyone.
All right. So let me ask you this, and if you guys have addressed this, I apologize, but who would be a guy that you've heard mocked to the Giants for the draft that you would hate for them to take?
Hate for them to take? I honestly don't know. Okay, we're talking about the 11th pick, Stan, I'm imagining.
I mean, or perhaps second round. I mean, just someone that you've heard mocked to them by, like, a quote-unquote source or an expert or whatever.
Honestly, I don't really think I have someone I would completely hate. I wouldn't want, I mean, if we're going to go back a couple months, them to reach on someone like Gregory Rousseau at pick 11, because that was something that was mocked in the offseason. But even if they wouldn't go with someone like Quiddy Pay, I would say that I'd probably be disappointed, because I feel like they could have traded back, and I feel like they would probably have passed up on other value. So there are guys that I would be disappointed in. But all in all, as long as I'm getting a good player, I'm not going to probably, like, throw a fit. I would be a little bit disappointed if it was someone like Quiddy Pay, which realistically it still can be.
Yeah, for me there, I would say I'm kind of just exactly on board with Nick. I'm not going to – there's probably not a remote control throw pick for me. I really have to think about it. I mean, I don't think they're going to do anything crazy, like take the D-tackle from Bama or anything stupid like that. I mean, I guess a remote control for me would be if they trade back and then they take the Bama defensive tackle, Barrymore. If they do that, that's one that I'm going to say is just devastatingly bad. But I don't even think he's that good to begin with. Let's start by saying that.
Let's not even speak of that. I don't even want to hear that.
But I will be disappointed with any edge.
Gettleman's listening to this. I'm scared.
he certainly won't be listening to us. See, there's so many Homer podcasts he can listen to over us. That just talking about how good the Giants are. But I will say this. I will be disappointed in any edge taken at 11. I will certainly be disappointed because in my mind, none of these edges, I really don't even think any of them are worth a top 32 pick personally. I know that sounds a little crazy, but I really don't start feeling comfortable taking any of these edges until like day two. So for me, and you take any at 11, it's a super disappointing pick for me.
All right. Here's another question for you guys about the draft. If you had to put money that the Giants would trade back into the first round, who would be the player they'd be trading to get?
Trade back up into the first round?
Yeah, okay. So they pick at 11, and then they trade their second plus something else, their second round plus something else to trade back into the first round to grab someone who's sliding.
Kyle Pitts, in my mind.
No,
he's talking
like
about trading
into the back of the first.
Like the DeAndre Baker trade.
Okay. My bad. Misheard. So who would be sliding? I'm imagining, say they go Devonta Smith at 11 or whatever, then they're going to be doing that for an edge. So maybe like Jason Owa, somebody that I would probably throw into that category. Aziz Ojulari has some knee things going on right now, but if that all checked out, according to them, he'd be another player I'd put in there.
For me, it wouldn't be any of those edges. I'm fine taking a shot on Owa at 42, but I wouldn't want to trade multiple assets for that risk. For me, it would be if they go edge at 11 or if they go anybody at 11 that's not a receiver, it would be Elijah Moore for me. I would be totally fine with, and I hate trading up, so I'm not totally fine with it because I really don't think they can afford to give up any of their picks. But if they trade up for Elijah Moore after going with an edge or Parsons or something like that or Slater, I could live with that because I love Elijah Moore. And another guy I would put in there is Creed Humphrey, Oklahoma center. Mm-hmm. I think I'd be good with that. Pull a little Saints action. Saints took the kid from Michigan, who I'm now blanking on, the interior offensive lineman from Michigan. What's his name, Nick? The kid last year?
Cesar Ruiz.
Yes, Cesar Ruiz. Yep. So
who would be the center if they picked him? Would they kick him out the guard?
Well, Nick was talking about it before, either on a recent podcast or we were talking about this off pod. he from all the tape he's watched on Creed, he thinks Creed can play guard. So I would think that's a good problem to have for the coaches. They can decide in camp if they want to move Gates to guard or if they want to keep Gates at center and put Humphrey in to compete with Hernandez and Lemieux.
Okay. All right. One more question for you guys. So I don't know if you guys are how intrigued you are by it, but I'm pretty intrigued by this whole NFC East, like three picks in a row thing, combined with the possibility for Washington to trade up for a QB. I think there's an outside chance we could have four straight NFC East picks. Do you think that that plays into their strategy at all, or do you think that they just don't care? For instance, do you think that they might approach whether they trade or not based on or who they pick based on what the Eagles behind them might do?
I honestly can't say definitively. I would imagine that it's probably they're aware of it and they would acknowledge it. And I don't know what inside information they have into what the Eagles might be doing. But I'm going to say I know that teams always draft to defeat their division and they draft to get an upper hand on their division. So I'm imagining it's probably something that they consider, but I just don't know how much information they would have.
Yeah, I'll echo what Nick says. I think especially with Gettleman, I don't think they're going to be too focused on what other teams are doing. I think they're more so focused on what they can do to better the Giants in their opinions.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate it. And keep producing all that great content.
Thanks, man. Thanks for joining us, Dan. All right, we're going to limit the next ones to just one question each just because we do have a lot more speaker requests than we've quite literally ever had. I've never seen a queue like this, which is exciting. But at the same time, we want to get to more of you or hopefully all of you. So right now, we're going to throw on Matt, the Aussie down under. Matt, what's going on, my man?
What's up, Matt?
Hey, man. How you guys going?
Chilling, bro.
Oh, I like it. How you going? I haven't heard that in a long time, Matt.
I'll make it quick. I've got I'm in the middle of a music class at the moment. I'm a teacher down here, and we're at the middle of class. So I've got a lot of kids looking at me, going, "What is he doing?" two things I'm looking at in the last couple of weeks. Seeing whoever of Patrick Surtain and J.C. Horn doesn't go to Dallas being mocked to us, and like I'm fairly new to the game, like I talked to you about, you know, recently, Dan, and I don't really understand why that seems to be a popular pick outside when we've got Bradbury and we just got Adoree Jackson, and it seems like buries Darnay Holmes a little bit. So I don't know if you guys could ease my concern about that being a pick there, or like explain to me what you guys think if that was the case or that was the way to go. Because when you were talking about people you might be disappointed in, I feel like for me, if they were to pick a corner at 11 over everyone else that could be there, that's something where I'd be a bit like, oh, why did they make that decision? So I don't know if you guys can talk to that for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with my take on that. Well, I'll start by saying this, Matt. I would think that there is a 90%, I'll give it only 90%, let's say for now, chance that that's smoke, that that's pre-draft smoke. You have to, like, since you said you're new to the game, I'll say something here that I fully believe in. Once you get to the 10 to 14 day mark before any draft, about 40 to 50% of what you hear is going to be just garbage. It's either going to be leaked by the agents to try to drive their players up. It's going to be leaked by teams on purpose to try to get other teams drafting around them off their scent. Or it's going to be leaked by accident. Like in the draft when the Giants selected Eli Apple, they by accidentally leaked their interest in Leonard Floyd. And then the Bears traded up one spot before them and their interest in Jack Conklin. And then the Titans traded up one spot before them to get those guys. So I'll start by saying that. But for me, why would I not hate that pick as much as I would hate an edge? For me, it's just totally based on my evaluations of the player. I think that prospects like J.C. Horn are really rare, first of all, and I feel really confident that he can be a really good corner in the NFL. And I don't feel that confident really about any of the edges except for Jalen Phillips, but Jalen Phillips has such a big off-field, you know, concern to me with the fact that, one, he retired from football, two, he has the concussions that twice in a row, and now there's a wrist injury apparently that people are talking about that he's been dealing with and that people are scared off of, and that just adds up to too many red flags for me. So I get it, you don't really need Horn, but I've just never been a big believer in drafting for need. Like, if you can put another great corner on this roster and you have a situation where, yeah, it would bury Darnay Holmes a bit, but at the same time, you then have unbelievable depth and the chance to build something similar to kind of what the Ravens have done with their corners, where they at one point had three really great corners lining up for them week after week, and teams just simply couldn't move the ball on them because they had so much good coverage. So that's my take on it. I'm curious if you differ on that, Nick.
I don't really differ on that. I would like them to go in another direction, but I don't think it's crazy to go a J.C. Horn or Patrick Surtain based on the evaluations of the players and what those players can do. And you got to think, man, last year the Giants kind of got lucky in the secondary at the corner position specifically, because James Bradbury only missed one game. I think Darnay Holmes missed a handful of games, like three games. And then their second cornerback spot was so bad that we saw so much Ryan Lewis, Isaac Yiadom, and players like that. It can be really quick, man. An injury happens here, another injury happens there, and then you're just zapped to your depth and you're just relegated to zone coverage the entire time. So it's not something that I necessarily – it's not my first choice, but if they were to go in that direction, I know they're adding a good football player who can help the team.
Do you worry then that, like, if you look at Jeff Okuda and the Lions, where he kind of struggled coming in to start, do you worry that these guys wouldn't necessarily give the same impact that you might get from – you know, a Devonta Smith or a, you know, whoever else at 11 that you could get, like, they don't get that same impact?
I absolutely worry about that for the year one, to be honest, just because that person's not going to start. Surtain or Casey wouldn't start early on, but they would be, you know, ingratiated into the lineup, and then you hope that Adoree Jackson and James Bradbury don't get injured, and then you would hope they would become a bigger part of your defense after James Bradbury's contract runs out after the 2022 season, I believe, and then you would just hope that they would get up to speed with everything. It would kind of be an embarrassment of riches, similar to like what Dan was talking about with Baltimore. But I do agree that Devonta Smith would be a better addition right now for the team to win right now.
Yeah, and I agree with that too. I will just say this as one parting note, Matt. If you start to get into the game of who can help us right away the most, I think that's one of the bigger mistakes teams can make when approaching the draft. I think what you really should be looking for at all times is, can this guy be a 5-year starter for me? Or more importantly, especially if you're picking within the top range of blue chips, which I would say varies from draft to draft, but is anywhere from like 12 to 18 players per class, let's say. If you're picking in that range, you can even be looking at, like, can this guy be a 10-year starter potentially for my team? Because that's ultimately how you win in the NFL. Filling the needs is nice. Like, you would obviously love to fill the needs in a perfect scenario, but I think ultimately the better approach is to find the best players. And I agree with Nick, by the way. I don't want them to go in this direction.
Cool. Love to hear it, guys. Thanks from down under. Appreciate you.
Awesome, Matt. Thanks for joining us, bro. All right, let's go up to the next in the queue, and that's Anthony Zarro. What's going on, Anthony?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Great picture, by the way.
Oh, thanks, Plaxico. Hell yeah.
I swear, Giants totally would have won that in 2008 if it wasn't for his little incident there.
Completely agree with that statement. That's the best, like, Giants roster I've ever seen in my life.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was ridiculous. That was a great team, man. Also, to piggyback on that smoke and mirrors stuff before the draft, I saw a thing by Peter Schrager, I think it was. It was where the Giants trade up to 4. To draft Kyle Pitts.
Yep, I saw
that.
So, like,
they trade Ingram, like, the first, like, 2 first-round picks and stuff or something. That was ridiculous.
Hopefully that doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah, I hope so. I hope so as well. So, my question is, can you guys give me, like, your top 3 that you want at 11? Like, you know, just on your big board? You know, like, kind of make it reasonable, I guess. You know, like, it's like no Penei Sewell or Pitts or anything like that. Just a reasonable, like, you know, top 3 that you want at 11.
For me, realistically, I think I would just go Slater, Waddle, Smith, to be honest.
Yeah, and I'll say it's the exact same thing for me.
It's strange, man, because we're picking at 11 and so many things can happen before the Giants pick. You know, usually we're so used to picking so damn high, Dan, right? We're so used to if this happens, then this will happen. The Giants can get this guy. But this year at 11, like, so many things can happen. We don't know. Players could, like, Penei Sewell could slot for all we know. There are a lot of reports that a lot of teams are higher on Slater because technically he's much more refined than someone like Sewell. I just don't see it happening because the guy is such a freak size, speed kind of combo type of offensive tackle. But he also didn't play in 2020. Are they going to overthink that? I'm not sure. It's exciting, but those would be my 3. Yeah.
And I will add this, Anthony. I don't think it's as unrealistic as you think for them to have those guys that you mentioned at their disposal when it comes to Sewell or Pitts, because if what I'm hearing is accurate, there's a good chance Atlanta's going to be going with a quarterback, which, by the way, they 100% should be picking at 4 in my mind with this class. And then I've been hearing a lot now about Carolina going quarterback at their pick, which I believe is 7. And that would be Fields or Lance, whichever one is not selected by Atlanta. I think they'll go, Atlanta will go with Lance. And then I think I've been hearing Carolina could be leaning towards Fields. And that won't surprise me with David Tepper as their owner. I believe that he has shown and proved that he is going to get very aggressive about finding a quarterback. He went after Teddy, then he went after Sam. I think he's taken a lot of shots and dart throws. And so if that happens and five quarterbacks come off the board, and you also have a team, you know, like the Bengals, you know, you have teams in there who may not be necessarily targeting wide receiver. I don't know. I feel like there's a decent chance, you know, someone that you're not expecting could fall to that pick.
Yeah, for sure. Like what I was thinking is the more quarterbacks taken before the Giants, the better.
Yep.
Because then, you know, we have our shot at anything. And like, you're right. There's so many like things that are in the air. Like, you know, it used to seem like a lock that the Bengals were going to take Penei Sewell, but you know, they might take Chase now, you know, reunite Chase with Burrow. And, right. You know, there's just so many, just what ifs, eh?
That's the beauty of the draft, man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for asking my question, guys. I've never known more about a draft than this year's draft. And that's thanks to you guys. So thank you.
Really appreciate that, Anthony. It means a lot to hear that.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ant.
Take care, guys.
All right. Let's get on Stevie Bob. What's going on, Stevie Bob?
Yo, what's up, guys?
How you doing, my man?
Stevie Bob, what's going on, bro?
Good, your old friend Stevie Bob from Colorado here.
Dude, anybody from Colorado, I should have moved you up the queue just because of that, but I felt bad already. Moved Matt up the queue.
No, I appreciate it. So being here in Colorado is always hard for me to try and talk to you guys at this time because we're eating dinner. But
right,
I was like, I got to jump in and talk to you guys before the draft starts.
Well, happy you did. What's going on?
Yeah, I appreciate
then?
All the work you guys have done. So here's my question for you. So I think Micah Parsons has the ability to transform our defense. And I thought it was interesting that Gettleman talked about Judge and this coaching staff really wanting two-way linebackers who can do it all. And a good buddy of mine went to Penn State, and I was talking about Parsons, and he says, yeah, well, in high school, Parsons was an edge rusher. And I'm like, why can't he be an edge rusher in the NFL? And I'm like, I know two guys who can probably tell me, but what do you guys think about that? I mean, is there any chance the Giants say, you know, maybe he's not a full-time pass rusher, but is this a guy who they could say, you know, he fills a need at edge rusher because we can have him rushing off the edge, say 30 to 50% of the defensive snaps a game. And so, you know, maybe they say we're going to draft him and try and bulk him up. I mean, I don't know about frame or whether his skill set really transitions, but knowing that that's what he did in high school and that he got good pass rushing grades when he was in college, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is probably one of the reasons why Nick and I were so excited about Parsons to begin with, and I still remain excited about the possibility. You said it best. I mean, he entered Penn State as an edge rushing prospect. That's the position he came in as. They kind of converted him. But like you said, that defense is very multiple at Penn State. That's kind of why the Giants fell in love with Cam Brown. So I think some kind of role here, and I'll ask Nick because I'm curious what Nick thinks about that idea, like more of a hybrid role. I think even if he's not in a hybrid role, and let's say he's just playing next to Blake for the majority of his snaps, you could still have him generate pressure from the in the A and B gaps. If you remember last year, the Giants finished 12th in the NFL in sacks. Not all of those sacks were around the edge. A lot of those sacks were, I don't want to call them cleanup sacks, but they were sacks that were somewhat coverage sacks. And I think that's kind of where he can dip and drop in coverage into his zone and then attack late in a down, late in a snap. And so I'm definitely excited by it. What do you think, Nick?
No, I definitely am. And I think that his skill set translates well. I don't think he has to go to be a full-time edge. He doesn't have to be somebody, you know, two-point stance, always on the edge. He could just do something that similar to what Cam Brown did, his former teammate in college, only in a much more enhanced stage where he's playing 80, 85, 90% of the snaps and not relegated to a smaller role. But you can use him as an edge rusher if you need to. You can use him on twist games and stuff like that in the middle. Right next to Blake Martinez is blitzing. He's very, very effective doing that. You can drop him in coverage. It's just he's basically going to be a movable chess piece for your front, and you can use him as well in coverage, like I said. So you can do a lot of different things with a player like Micah Parsons, and I would not if everything checks out with that player, I would love to have him as a New York Giant. It's just, it all has to check out. He can't have a handler, and he has to be able to buy into the whole system. And those are just things I can't really speak on.
Yep, agreed.
Awesome, guys. Well, I appreciate you taking my question, and I look forward to hearing more good draft content in the lead up.
Yeah, man, thanks for joining us. Happy to finally have you on, Stevie Bob.
Yeah. Thanks, Stevie Bob.
All right, let's get on. Hoodie Zay, another new first-time, new-time caller. What, you there, Hoodie? What's going on, man?
Yo.
What up?
Damn, man, I didn't know they had giant stuff like this on here. I just been seeing the 49ers all here.
Oh, dude, we've been doing this every Tuesday night at 8 p.m.
Oh, man, I don't be on locker room. But I wanted to talk about the draft, obviously. And I feel like this draft, they have to nail it with the first two picks. Now, personally, like at 11, this seems to be like the last 3 years, out of the last 3 years, this seems to be the most like confusing who are the Giants going to pick. Because last year, it was obvious we were going to pick offensive line. Then it seemed like we was going to pick quarterback, but a different position as well. Then Saquon was available. It just seemed – what do y'all think, like, we should really pick? Personally, I'm all for Jalen Waddle at 11 if he's available.
I mean, I'm a huge – Hoodie Zay, I'm a huge Jalen Waddle fan. I do not mind adding high-quality players at the offensive line at pick 11, at the wide receiver position at pick 11. And I'm not opposed to certain defensive players as well. I mean, the whole edge thing, I do believe it's going to be a reach if they do select an edge at 11. Like I said, Jalen Phillips is a top 10 talent, but you can't ignore all of those red flags. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, the concussions, the quitting of football, and now there's a wrist thing that a lot of teams are feel like could really hinder his NFL career. I mean, that's a lot. So for me, it's really the players, meaning Rashawn Slater, Penei Sewell, if Kyle Pitts were to fall, Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, and then I would throw Micah Parsons in there in those corners. But I mean, that's more so like I wouldn't be totally pleased with that. That would more be a something where I'm like, okay, it's a good football player, but I don't know if that's the right direction when you have guys like the players I just named before on the board as well.
Yeah, Hoodie, I'm with Nick on this one. I mean, we do see eye to eye a lot, but it seems even more so recently. But I think one thing to take away is all those players I'm with him on, Waddle, Smith, Parsons, Slater, Sewell are my favorite five. But we both have Waddle as our wide receiver two behind Chase, so we would probably prefer Waddle if those linemen aren't there.
And, yeah, I feel like Devontae Smith and Waddle will both be a good pick. Yep. I just feel like we need that speed to go with Kenny Golladay and Darius Slayton. You know, maybe not keep Sterling Shepard around because, you know, he's been a health issue for like the last 3 years now. We just need separation. That's all we need, really, on the offensive side. And to help Daniel Jones in his development because he has all these weapons now. There's no excuse. You need to perform. You have to.
Yeah, no doubt, man.
But appreciate y'all, man.
Hey, Hoodie Zay.
Thanks for joining us, Hoodie. Really appreciate it.
What's up, man?
Hey, dude, enjoy the draft, man. Let's hope we get some Jalen Waddle. Let's hope we bring back a number 17.
I hope.
All right, man. Have a good one, bro. All right, Notorious V.I.G. is next. What's going on, Notorious V.I.G.?
Notorious, what's up?
Are you there? Notorious.
Yo,
what up?
I don't know what it is, but you guys always go silent on this app when it's my turn. And that's how I know it's my turn. So it's not so bad. Hopefully it's not too bad for you.
What's going on, bud?
All right. So I am a begrudging subscriber to the YouTube channel. I'm looking forward to it. But that font... that bubble font of Big Blue Banter, you gotta step that up, man.
Which font?
There's gotta be some cutie in like the CBS graphics room that wants to do your laundry. Maybe she can.
Well, this YouTube page is totally unrelated to CBS, and we don't want them in on it because we want that to be our own thing.
Fair enough.
And unfortunately for us, me and Nick are unbelievably novice when it comes to YouTube video graphics, editing, all that. We're going to get better at it. We promise that. But
what here? But here's the thing. I mean, the fans love you. Throw out a tweet. You'll get 10 logos in a day.
Yeah, you're right about stuff. That. That's not a bad idea.
All right. So now that we're throwing out crazy thoughts, if you look at there's the Jimmy Johnson trade chart, there's that Rich Hill one, there's probably others. Presuming four QBs get taken before Detroit, a third this year and a third next year, is a good trade for Detroit to move back from 7 to 11. Now, if there's no quarterback that someone's going to trade up for, you know, it's probably decent value. Would you make that trade, give up a third this year, a third next year to move up for either Pitts or Sewell? And if so, if not, why not?
I think that's interesting, to be honest. I would definitely think about it. Ultimately, I may say no, because I believe there's going to be players at 11 that I still have a very high grade on, and I do believe that the Giants should have more than just six picks going into this draft. I would like for them to kind of get more selections for this draft, especially since they have like 46 contracts that are expiring after the 2021 season.
Yeah.
So that's probably where I would go, to be honest, but it's definitely something to consider.
Yeah, for me, I also definitely lean strongly no on this because of their situation right now. With only six picks in this draft class, then they'd be getting rid of another one in next draft class. And like Nick said, most importantly, I think, is the fact that they have so many expiring contracts and they already dipped into a lot of their cap space for next year. Plus, they might do that Saquon Barkley extension next year. I got to be honest with everybody here. I don't really want that to happen, but
zero chance.
I wouldn't zero say chance zero, he gets zero chance of happening. Year. If they win 11 games and win a playoff game, and Gettleman is here for another 4 years, I think you're crazy to think there's 0% chance Dave Gettleman will redo Saquon Barkley's contract. I don't know. This is the guy who drafted him at two. So I guess it depends entirely on that to me. But either way, regardless of all of that, I feel like it's too dangerous to give up all these assets for one player, especially because it's not like, you know, if you're stuck at 11, let's say, and they don't do that, and all those quarterbacks are already off the board, there's going to be some team that makes that deal, let's say, and trades up. And in that sense, that means one of those guys is off the board, and you're still going to have a good chance to get Slater, Smith, or Waddle there at 11. I don't think you're losing out on two third-round picks worth to make that move, I guess is how I'd break it down.
All right. I mean, I hear you, but don't you feel that the difference between the teams that are kind of, you know, contending for the playoffs versus contending for deep in the playoffs, are those real difference makers? I mean, I Slater's a nice player. Smith, Waddle, they're going to be nice players. I don't think that they're all pros. I think they're going to be great players. Pitts is a difference maker. Sewell could be, I don't know. I'll leave it to you guys, but he could be if he lives up to the hype. Yeah. Better lineman than everyone from last year and for the last 5 years, right?
I think that's a fair way to look at it. Honestly, I really do. But I just, I guess, have a different opinion of what both Waddle and Smith can become. Like, for example, would you consider Calvin Ridley to be on the brink of, if not an all-pro type of receiver right
no.
now? You would. No. Okay. All right.
No. And Dan, from the receiver side and the running back side, right? You look at all the playoff teams. As long as you have a decent quarterback and you have that line and they are the least important to have that all pro. Right?
I agree with that, but you're talking about Kyle Pitts, who's not going to all of a sudden become the next Gronk or, you know, another one of those two-way tight ends. Like, he's an okay blocker. He has a decent frame to become a better blocker, but he's also going to be very similar to what you're going to get as far as from offensive side of the ball, just from a production standpoint, to one of those receivers. Like, he's not going to be your two-way guy, I don't think.
Yeah, but at the same time, don't you think that a guy like Pitts, and I'll let it go after this, a guy like Pitts does more for Barkley, not in that he blocks, but that defense has to respect the middle of the field. He's going to do more than a good offensive lineman for Barkley.
I think you can make that same argument for Jaylen Waddle, though.
Because
Jaylen, like, I'm telling you, defensive coordinators, man, they were going to be pulling their hair out to try to figure out how to cover the Giants offense with Saquon in the backfield, Jaylen Waddle manning the slot, or even as the number two, you can even put him outside. It's just, you're going to have to cloud cover this guy somehow. And that's going to remove players from the box, opening up more rushing lanes for Saquon Barkley. But I understand where you're coming from. You're not wrong from a Nexus No standpoint whatsoever. I mean, Kyle Pitts is going to be a mismatch nightmare in the NFL. Just depends on how you view it, I guess.
Okay. And I think Pitts is literally the best player in this non-QB in this class. So, like, I get it. I wouldn't be opposed to this, really, if he starts to slide like that. They're just in such a tough spot because they've given up so many of their picks for Leonard Williams, Isaac Yiadom, and so on and so forth, that you just it's tough to continue giving up picks with all the expiring contracts. Remember, like, I know it's rare to hit on these mid-round picks, like a third-round pick. It is pretty rare. I will agree with that. But right. The reward when you do hit on those guys, it's 4 years under team control for $1 million against the cap. Like, it's just irreplaceable. That 4 years, $1 million against the cap each year, it's so hard to replace that.
Yeah, I hear you. But that's what you have a second, a fourth, and a fifth for, too. I mean, it gets pretty flat once you get to that third round.
I agree.
Right? Which is why Belichick keeps trading back, right? Because that difference between that third and the fifth rounder is scheme fit. Right. It's personality fit. Right. Team captains, all that, yada, yada. Right.
Yeah.
You know, the real difference makers are gone.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I hear you. I don't think you're wrong at all.
OK.
There's also a correlation to the fact that they found contributors like Lemieux and Tay Crowder, and even to an extent, Cam Brown and Carter Coughlin, because they had 6 picks on day 3 versus in past classes where they've had, you know, as few as just 2 or 3 picks in day 3.
Right. Fair enough. So now my friends are going to spank me because you guys shot me down, but thanks.
Yeah, no, I get it, though. I like it.
All right. Have a good one, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, thank
you. Take care, Notorious.
All right, Felix, what's up, man? We've been interacting with Felix on Twitter for a damn long time. I'm glad you finally decided to join the show, Felix. How you doing, man?
What's up, bud?
Hey, what's going on? Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, man.
Awesome. Yo, so yeah, long time follower of what you guys do. Really appreciate the work you guys do. I'm kind of like a amateur draft nick myself. I'm like working on my own little like ranking list and stuff. And so your guys' work, I always appreciate, always listen. Awesome. So yeah, happy to be here, man. Just a quick question. One thing I've noticed, at least with Gettleman with the Giants, in all 3 years that he's been leading the franchise, he has almost like tripled down at least one position. So like 2018, I want to say defensive line, because I know he went or like pass rusher front seven, because he went B.J. Hill, R.J. McIntosh. And somebody earlier on, I'm blanking right now. Yeah, Lorenzo Carter. And then 2019, you know, DeAndre Baker, Corey Ballantyne. And there's one other person I'm blanking again. Oh my
Julian
God.
Love.
Yep, there we go. Julian Love. And then obviously last year, offensive line. So my question is, you know, a lot of talk about receiver, pass rusher. What position do you think is more likely to be one that they would like, you know, double down or triple down on coming into this draft? And I saw somebody in the chat said Sam Beal too. So yeah, like, which position would you say you think you could see them spending more assets on than just one?
I see you, Stan. Nice Sam Beal drop there with the supplemental draft. But I would say edge, to be honest, Felix. Edge would be the easy choice for me, just because they need so many bodies there, and they're too returning starters are coming off of surgeries, and they add guys like Ryan Anderson, who's a nice run defender, and Odenebo, who I feel like is a high upside guy who can have an impact, but still, there's just a dearth of talent, proven talent on the roster at that position, so definitely edge.
Yeah, for me, it would be wide receiver. I talked about this in my 5-step blueprint for what I would think would be a perfect Giants draft, and I think when you draft into the strength of a draft class, and I think they did a great job of that last year by drafting 2 offensive tackles, and I wrote about that in my pre-draft article as well. I said, listen, this is a really deep and talented offensive tackle class. They can get two. Don't be afraid to get two. And I feel the same way about the wide receiver position in this class. And obviously, that was also the case in last class. So that would be the one for me.
Oh, awesome, awesome. And I know you guys were restricting it to like one question a person, but like outside of your affinity for Chase, Waddle, you know, like in the first round, is there somebody second, third round that you would see? Like to your point, Dan, you said you could see them doubling down at receiver. Is there a second guy that you would want, like maybe in the third or the fourth or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to stick with – oh, yeah, go ahead, Nick.
No, I was just going to say if someone like Elijah Mitchell were to fall to the second or Dyami Brown in the third, those would probably be names that I would throw out there. But, Dan, who you got?
Yeah, and I know you meant Elijah Moore there for a second
round. Yeah,
I know. But for me, looking a little – going to what you said, third and fourth round, I'll say for fourth round it would be – Josh Palmer, the wide receiver out of Tennessee. Love this kid. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a stud. Going a little deeper than that, Simi Fuoku out of Stanford. Know he's older. Yeah. He went on a mission, but you just don't see guys with that kind of lateral agility at that size. And that to me is the type of players that you take a risk on around those picks, because you don't really need you don't need the guys who dominate at the collegiate level but have no shot in the pros. And then one guy me and Nick have been on for a while, probably again more of a day three guy, would be Amir Smith Marset out of Iowa. We've both watched enough Big Ten football. I've watched so much Iowa. I could just see this kid is a difference maker, and he's not that far off from the Rondell Moores. And he is, but he's not at that level. Mm-hmm. But he's not too far, as far off as people think, from the Rondell Moores and the Elijah Moores of this draft class. And you're going to get him 100, 150 picks later. So he's another guy I got my eye on.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate the answers. I remember you guys talking about Smith Marset when you talked to my boy Zach on one of your pods. Yep. Yeah, that was an awesome pod, by the way. I'm really happy I had him on. But thanks, man. I really appreciate you guys talking to me.
Yeah, thanks for joining, Felix. It was great to have
you. Absolutely. Take care, man.
Take care, sub, bro.
All right, we're already going longer than we ever have, but we want to get to everybody tonight. Why not? You guys have been waiting for a long time, so let's get to the last two here. We'll start with Mike. What is going on, Mike? How you doing, my man?
Hey, what's happening, guys?
What's up, not Mike? Much.
Oh, man, I can't complain. A couple quick things. One, Nick, man, you're like really blowing up, man. You're like on everybody's podcast. I hit Locked On Giants. You're on there. You're on a whole bunch of different things. I'm like, man, these guys are like the Beatles now all of a sudden. Congratulations on all the success, because you guys are really, really good at what you guys do.
Thank you so much.
Dan, I'll have to ask you about fantasy when fantasy comes around, since I found out that you're on the editor side of CBS. I've been in the CBS league since 2002. I'll have to ask you about that down the line. But I have two questions, and I'll make them short and sweet. One, I think we have to start to look at the draft a little bit differently, because we keep saying what's Gettleman's going to do, what is Gettleman going to do, and I really think that it's a Joe Judge draft. I mean, if you look at last year when he took the linebackers, and as many as he took, that's a New England staple, linebackers. When you look at this draft and what we need versus what might be available, I think it's also going to be something that's very similar to England, like guys that are versatile. So I could see us taking, you know, like you guys said, a Slater or the Elijah Vera Tucker from USC, guys that are multiple in any aspect. Because didn't they cross-train the line? So that's somebody that's one of the things. And then the other thing I had to say was Rondell Moore from Purdue. I don't know how old you guys are, but do you guys remember Dorian Bryant from Purdue?
I do not know.
I actually don't, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah, he's like 2003, 2004, like wide receiver. But I remember him from Purdue, and that's who he reminds me of. But I just don't see those type of guys fitting into Jason Garrett's offense. Now, if it's another coordinator that comes by, potentially – but I just think that Jason Garrett's offense is just so, what's the word, old, that I don't see those type of guys fitting in his system, like those jet sweep guys, those Tyreek Hill guys. And to a caller, you know, a couple minutes ago that said that you don't really need a wide receiver. I mean, both Super Bowl teams had Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans. So you need wide receivers. You just don't need them at premium picks. You got to hit on them. But that's all I really had. That's all.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. First off, do you want us to call you Marcel or Mike?
My name's Marcel, but okay. Everybody at work calls me Mike, so it's all good. I answer to both.
Okay. Well, Marcel, my man. So I 100% agree with you. I do believe this is I think it's a team effort. I don't believe that it's just Dave Gettleman. When I say just Dave Gettleman, I mean it as a team effort. I know general managers tend to – they have the things that they tend to do sometimes, and obviously every general manager is going to have that. But I do believe that Joe Judge has a heavy influence on the draft picks and on what's going on, because this is more his team than it is Dave Gettleman's team at the moment. And as for Rondell Moore, I agree. I don't think like the Rondell Moores and the Kadarius Tonys of the world, I don't think their best landing spot is in Jason Garrett's offense. I think they would be better to land with probably a little bit more of a creative offensive mind that really optimizes space. And that's not necessarily something he did well in 2020.
Hey, yeah, Nick, for me, Mike, it's a rare opportunity that I get to disagree with Nick these days. It almost never happens, it feels like. And not by design. We just are seeing a lot of things eye to eye these days. But I believe that from everything I've heard, from conversations I've had with one, a former NFL GM that I'm not allowed to name because he's that off the record, and the other one was with John Fox, a former coach. From everything I've heard from them, almost every situation, the general manager is the one making the draft picks in the end. He has final say. He listens to his scouts. He listens to his coaches. He tries to do his best by them. But when it's a close call, it's generally the general manager who makes that final say. And I think Gettleman's a very old school general manager. So I don't think he's the type to break that mold too much. So I know there's a lot of talk about that. There's a lot of speculation about Joe Judge's team, all this. But I don't buy into it. But I mean, it could be there. It's so impossible to know. I don't think either Nick or I feel 100% confident on that one way or another. And then as far as your other question goes, I think you can get into trouble if you're trying to draft players to fit Jason Garrett's system, because for all we know, this could be the last year of Jason Garrett. For all we know, he could only have four more games. Joe Judge pulled the plug on Mark Colombo a few games into his first season as a Giants coach. And so he clearly has shown that that's not out off the table. And we already saw Freddie Kitchens call a game. We already saw Freddie Kitchens then get a promotion this offseason. We already saw him call a game, which, by the way, was the best called game in the entire season, literally from an offensive play-calling standpoint, both from the idea of running on passing downs and passing on run downs and all of that, you know, the personnel, everything they did in that game, despite having Colt McCoy at quarterback. He's already proven he can. So I wouldn't draft any players to fit Jason Garrett's system, I don't think.
Okay, and then my last question, I know, Dan, you're doing stuff with CBS that night, but Nick, are you going to, like, break down, like, some of the picks, like, live on Twitter?
It won't be live. I mean, I'll probably tweet something about it, but Dan and I are going to release a podcast right after the draft every night, and then I'll also be doing work for Big Blue View and Giants Country, which is the Sports Illustrated page that Patty Traina has, so I'll be doing work for them as well.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, we're going to have a reaction podcast right after the first round concludes. So that'll be late night for anybody who wants to jump in on that or in the AM. And then we're also going to do every single day of the draft targets for the next day. So on Friday, there will be a day two targets podcast separate. And then on Saturday, there will be once again the reaction to day two and then day three targets as well.
So over under Eastern Standard Time, the last pick is called before or after 11:30.
I would probably say after, to be honest.
Yeah, after for sure.
All right, guys, take care.
Yeah,
take care, myself.
All right, one more here. We got in. He's been waiting forever. Andrew Burke, how you doing, my man? You there, Andrew? I wouldn't blame you if you're not. It's been a long wait. Unfortunately. Oh, it looks like, are you there, Andrew?
Yeah. You guys can hear me?
Yeah.
Yep. Gotcha, man. Andrew.
Hey, yeah. Same thing as that other guy. When you answer my request, I get like that silence for like 10 seconds. So my apologies on that. I'll make this quick. Dan, we talked 2 weeks ago. Nick, nice to finally speak to you. It's been a long time listening to you guys.
Hey, buddy.
My question for you guys is, like, knowing the Giants, like, six picks, at like what round in the draft would you think we're getting like an upgrade at interior offensive line and an off-ball linebacker? And then just real quick, I'm just listening to you guys real quick. How bad was that trade for the Ravens between them and the Chiefs?
It's a little trade talk. Well, I guess I'll tackle the Giants part of this. Honestly, I think a sweet spot would be, if say they don't trade back or anything like that, would be the third round, where guys like Aaron Banks, Ben Cleveland, maybe Quinn Miners, the Division III kid out of Wisconsin, Whitewater, where those guys are still around. That's if the Giants do pass on Rashawn Slater, Penei Sewell, and then they pass on like the Creed Humphreys of the world in the second round.
Yeah, and I'll tackle both those questions because I agree with Nick on that. The second round is a really nice sweet range, but I think there could even be value that falls to the third round there on the interior defensive line. Guys like Aaron Banks, who we've talked about at Notre Dame, and other players that we have our eye on. I mean, I'd have to take a look at my board to take a look, but I think there could be value. That falls to day three. And then to answer your other question, I actually had a conversation with Nick about this off the podcast, so I was curious his take on the trade. They were put in a tough spot. The Ravens were in this situation because he was going to hold out because they're going to have Ronnie Staley back, who they've already extended, and he's going to play left tackle. Marquise Brown said, look, I proved I can play left tackle last year. I want to play left tackle. That's what I was born to play. And so they didn't really have any leverage. So like Nick was like, they got a pretty good return there considering they didn't have a lot of leverage, like getting a first round pick. But in my mind, it's so unlikely that you're going to get somebody like Marquise Brown at that position, offensive tackle, such a high value position, such a hard to find position at 31 or, you know, at any of their picks. Really, it's going to be hard to replace that player, certainly in 2021 and maybe in 2022 or 2023. They may never develop into that player. So that's one thing. But I will say this, kudos to the Chiefs, man. I mean, they've been so aggressive in fixing the one flaw they had last year, and it was only a flaw due to the injuries, which is the offense. Now they added Marquise Brown. I'm talking.
you did.
I wasn't going to say anything. Orlando, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Orlando Brown Jr. And they do have Marquise Brown still in the roster, and obviously Kyle Long and Joe Thuney. I mean, they're really shaping up to have a really good roster for the season.
Yeah. It's been in terms of like they're never going to get past the Chiefs now. I mean, that's what they're trying to do, which obviously is the goal. But I feel you guys on it. It's like he wanted to play left tackle. I get it. So, no, I mean, guys, thanks for taking my call. And, I don't mind waiting around because I usually go for a run at 8 o'clock on Tuesday. So, Dan, I know you hate that. So I don't mind, waiting for you guys to take my call.
Love it.
Oh,
run away.
Going for running.
This is. Listen, here's the deal with running. I don't understand it. I just don't understand. Like, I could play pickup basketball for 2 hours. When I used to live in the city, they had something called indoor hoops, which is this awesome idea that somebody created. I don't know if it's still going, where he would rent out school gyms in New York in the city for after hours. And you go to a website, and the first 15 people to sign up pay $10. You get 2 hours of open court pickup basketball. You rotate in and out. I could do that every single night. If I had opportunity to do that every night, I could. But without the competition, if you take out the competition factor where I'm competing to win something, I just can't do it. And running, there's no competition. Who am I competing against? Myself to beat my shitty time? I'll go 3.5 minutes into a run, Andrew, and I'll be like, I feel like I've been doing this for 22 minutes. I got to stop and I'll turn around. So, all the kudos to you and people like you and Nick who can do running and enjoy it. But for me, man, I just can't do it.
No, yeah, it's not for everyone. I'm actually in Hoboken, so I got a nice city view on the pier there. But
that is nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take what I can get. Especially at nighttime, it's not too hot out. So, yeah. Yep. All right, thanks, guys.
Yep. Hey, thanks, man.
Thanks for joining us.
You too.
All right, we are already on our longest locker room ever. But Todd, you did just join in, so I want to give you one chance to get in here. If you're here, Todd, do you have a question for us? You want to shout out? What's up, Todd?
Oh, hey, guys. Great show, as always. I always appreciate you taking the time and running late tonight. So I'll make it quick. This has been way too positive and uplifting and optimistic for Thursday night. So what is your doomsday scenario if Gettleman somehow screws this up? I kind of feel like with all the QBs that are likely to get taken, that's highly unlikely. But I just have very little faith in Gettleman that ultimately he'll make the right choice. So what would be your worst case scenario that Gettleman would be your throw the remote at 11?
At 11, go ahead.
Dan and I, we went over this a little bit, right? Could you imagine if they were to go with like Christian Barmore or something like that?
Oh, God, no.
I'll give a more realistic one, though, for the whole draft, because we did go over this a little earlier. For me, the realistic one would be reach for an edge at 11, whoever it may be. I'll say Quiddy Pay because he's the one I'm least interested in at 11. I think he has the lowest ceiling by far of the big names. Then in round two, come back at it. And draft Christian Barrymore if he falls, or like let's say maybe okay, let's throw that out in round two. Then, let's throw that out and say they do something decent in round two. Then in round three, come back and take like one of those Aleem McNeil or like an interior defensive lineman who's going to be a two down run stopper in, with your round three pick. That would be like go reach on edge in round one, come back in either round two and round three, or get an interior defensive lineman.
That seems that seems pretty awful. Okay, yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate it. Hopefully, Judge for has us, his ear.
Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I want to say one thing. Luckily for us, Todd, this is known by – I've now heard this from two evaluators, John Ledyard, who we had on the podcast earlier this month, and I also heard this from, I believe, Tom Pelissero or one of those big-name reporters. This is the worst interior defensive line class in maybe a decade, so that's great news for us because that means it's less likely that Dave sees one that he has to take.
Agreed. Agreed. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Enjoy the show as always. Thanks.
Thanks for jumping on, Todd. All right, everyone. That's all the time we have for. As always, please do us a favor if you're listening to this on recorded version. Leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Hopefully it's 5 stars. Head over to our YouTube page, Big Blue Banter. All you got to type in on YouTube, Big Blue Banter. Hit subscribe. Like a couple of those new videos. We're building that page up from the ground up, and it's in its earliest stages. Finally, you can find us on Instagram. We're posting a lot. That's NY Big Blue Banter on Instagram. And then here, every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. on the Locker Room app. Next Tuesday, we'll be recapping the draft. Should be a lot of fun. Otherwise, have a great rest of your night, and we will talk to you guys soon.